Hi, it's Kevin Flood here on America's Web Radio Classic Car Show, and I'd like to welcome Paula Cooper, the joint owner of the Bubble Car Museum in Langwick, Boston, Lincolnshire, the UK. The museum has a display of Bond, Reliant, Frisky and many other motors, plus recreated shops, memorabilia and a cafe. Looking around on the internet, there's a number of really good reviews of the place. A totally unique little museum containing everything I love from the period of motoring that I love. Good period dioramas and period accessories everywhere. A good caff. Delightful slice of motoring history, including many makes I don't remember. Nicely displayed, very friendly owners, and a little gem of a caff all at reasonable prices. And there's a lot of reviews like that, Paula. That's very nice.
We've been really pleased with some of the response.
Yeah, it's how do you advertise the museum? Do you use social media, or do you rely on local newspaper advertising, or?
We've our own website, which if you Google in Bubble Car Museum, we're usually the top hit, and a certain amount of social media, but not a huge amount, to be honest.
How did you? So can I get some details about you and how you came to have the museum, really?
Well, we used to live in Somerset, at which point we did. We were 2CV and sort of Associated Citroen restorers. We did that for a number of years, moved up to Lincolnshire, and we bought somewhere with 3 or 4 acres, really with not that in mind, although we'd always done the odd bit of restoration on micro cars. So there's always been a thing in the micro car movement that there should be a museum, and everyone was very sort of nickel and dime about it. Who'd pay, who'd sponsor this? And we just thought, well, maybe we've enough room here. We went out with like stakes and tape and see what we could build. I got on the internet, spoke to local council, anyone I could think of, and it went from there, really. We opened the first museum near Sleaford, which is about half hour drive from here, in 2002, 2003, thereabouts.
Yeah, well, that was my next question, actually, how long you've been open for. So you've had some good support from local authorities and local council.
We've had fantastic support from local authorities. We really have had a lot of help. I mean, rather sweetly, our local MP, who's brand new, whose campaign I helped with here near Boston, mentioned us in his maiden speech.
Oh, great.
You couldn't get much more support than that.
That's really good. I mean, it's good to see, you know, somebody who's got a passion about these things and wants to get things open, and they're not hamstrung by planning permission and stuff like that.
We had massive help from planning. Absolutely, absolutely couldn't have backed us more.
That's fantastic. That's good to hear. What was the first micro car that started it for you there, and why that one?
Well, my partner's always driven Heinkel Trojans, and we always carted around this Heinkel Island that he's got waiting to restore that we've never got to and still haven't. And the first one we bought was a little red Heinkel, and I bought a Type 3 Bond.
Okay. So is that the two strokes? Is that the two-stroke one, the Type 3?
Yeah, the one with the Villiers engine.
Yeah, I remember that.
There you go.
I can remember those. So giving my age away a little bit now as well. But I can remember a lot of micro cars being around, particularly, I guess, late 60s, early 70s seem to be.
See, I don't remember them at all. And I was living then in Kent, and I would have thought there would have been a fair amount around because there were huge dealerships in South London, like Pride and Clark's, that I remember for the motorbikes, but I don't remember micro. I really don't remember them at all on the road, which is most odd, really.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was into motorbikes for quite a long time, and he had motorbike and sidecar, and one of the things he was considering was a Messerschmitt at the time, if I remember. So it is kind of interesting.
A lot of people sort of had motorbike, then motorbike and sidecar, and then, you know, depending on their sort of social circumstances, that was a car was a big step up. It was a lot of money back then. It was a lot of wages. They're cheaper now. You can buy a cheaper car quid pro quo than you could then, and it was a big step up. But if you could do it without having to take a driving test, which again would have been expensive, and you could still drive it on your motorbike license, that was how a lot of people got into being a car-owning family.
Yeah, I do remember a lot of people well, because I actually was in the motor trade for a long time, and a lot of the guys had motorbikes in the summer and would go to a Reliant or something like that in the in
Reliant
this
or a
winter.
Bond or
Yeah,
something like that for
definitely.
you know, and that meant you could actually take, you know, you had a, fundamentally a four-seater. I mean, not the
Yeah.
most comfortable, but then a lot of the other cars weren't comfortable then either.
No, certainly not. I mean, I've got a 1929 Model A, and it isn't comfortable, I could tell you.
No, not at all. No. So really, what people it was a big social leap up to be a car owning family. I mean, I can remember being at school and people didn't have cars. I mean, we had two, and there were actually friends of mine whose parents didn't have a car at all, which seemed amazing. But there's a lot of people in that situation, and you know, Dad went to work on a bike, and people used the bus and all sorts.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we sound like the landed gentry. We certainly weren't, but we just had two cars. And but I mean, a lot of people could move into, especially a Bond, you know, which they could deal with and understand. It's a Villiers engine. It's the same as on their motorbike. Barclays, which were a bit less practical but really quite tasty, had Excelsior or Royal Enfield. So the technology was the same. You could repair it. You know, you knew what you were dealing with.
Definitely. It's what was your what's your favourite micro car?
I wouldn't really say I've got an absolute favourite. I've got a little tiny French van called a Solito. That's by Newmap, which is a French, and I just love the look of that. But you'd need to be its mother to love it, sort of thing. It's a belt and chain driven, so that's a real hide into nothing. I mean, tiny, very impractical little thing, but just the look that looks absolutely cute.
What's your favourite exhibit car wise there?
I'll go back to the Solito. Well, really, the most popular ones, what everyone calls the bubble car, which obviously didn't exist, are the Isettas and
That's
Heinkels.
right.
We, on the whole, we run a Heinkel as a ride car because we do sort of like 10-minute trip round the lanes round us for people. And the Messerschmitt are the most popular. The one most people don't even know about is a Meadows Frisky, and yet there were a lot of those. Some people come in and they had a scooter car, you know, they're delighted to see one of those. So an odd thing, but everyone's got a sort of, you know, a must-have.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, being interested in cars for a long time and stuff, until I started researching the museum, I'd never heard of a Frisky. I
No.
had to say, I'd never
Well,
heard of it.
Meadows was a huge tractor making firm. They
Yeah.
did a tractor with a massive central flywheel that showed. I mean, a huge, great thing. Very, very unusual vehicles. And how they segued into cars, it's sort of Michelotti design, dear little car. Looks like a perfect tiny car shrunk, for want of a better expression. Little fins on the back. It's a very nice looking little car.
That's interesting because my wife's got a 66 Herald, which was also designed by Michelotti, and when I looked at the picture of the Frisky, it does look
Yeah.
like a little like a small Herald,
Yeah,
actually.
it's got that kind of, obviously
Yeah.
everyone's got a style that they design
Yeah.
to, and obviously that was his.
Yeah, no, I kind of looked at it and thought, yeah, it does look a little bit like a scaled down Herald, but
Yeah,
that's
it does.
interesting. Could you describe the location of the museum, what facilities you've got there, and when you open and
Well,
things
we're
like that?
about 3 miles from Boston on the coast, but we're slightly sort of northwest of Boston. And it's a village called Langwick, which has got a sort of river bridge. You come over the bridge and up the strait to us. But we're not too difficult to find. And what we've got a campsite behind the museum. So we do a huge amount of rallies, either single mark rallies or we do our own rally. We've got a little rally in a Halloween rally for the end of season. And in May, we do a micro car rally. But we get loads of other cars, like other marks that come and
Yeah,
visit.
I was going to ask what marks have you had there?
God, just about everything.
Wow.
I mean, honestly, almost everything. We've had Bentley owners right down. I mean, we get the German scooter rally, which is a good one in May, and we get the Heinkel Club, the Bond, the Bug Club have been here, all the micro car clubs, in fact, including, you know, we did the Isettas 50th anniversary. Which was a lovely one. They were hoping to get 50 cars. They nearly did. One bloke just bought a door. But I mean, you know, I think it's in the spirit of things.
No, definitely.
And yeah, we've had everything. I mean, absolutely everything. And Mondeo owners, I didn't even know there were any. And they
Not
come and
something
do a
you'd want to
rally.
admit to, is it? I guess
Well, these are very sort of
that.
slammed down and sort of whizzed up.
Yeah.
Not classic, but I mean, you know, it's in
Yeah.
the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
But yeah, we do get, no, we get a huge amount. And there's a lot of classic cars in this area. Boston has a marvellous classic car club, and so does Louth to the north of us.
Do you
It's a
think
big
it's.
area for that kind of thing. And you see a lot of them running, which is lovely.
Yeah, it's a little bit like round here because there was a number of American air bases around here, which meant there's always been quite a lot of American cars around here. And I believe up your way there used to be bases there, didn't there? Not
Yeah,
too
not so
far
much
away.
American bases, more because the whole of Lincolnshire is sort of, you know, was the heavy bomber
Yeah,
country
yeah.
and the Dam Busters just up the road from us, just up the road.
Yeah.
And obviously we've got the Lancaster at Coningsby, which is literally just up the road. That flies over us. I mean, we don't even go out and look now.
Yeah, because it's
We've
got
got quite blasé
are all
about it.
three of that. I think that's the Battle of Britain flight, isn't it?
Yes, the Battle of Britain
Yeah.
flight at Coningsby, and then at East Kirkby you've got the other Lancaster, which is Just Jane. That appears in loads of films. And at the moment that's not a flying one, but it will be again, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I noticed the visitors are mentioning the food facilities as being excellent as well. That's
Well, we do
every review.
all of our own. I bake all the cakes for the museum, and we try and keep. We've got a 40-seater sort of tea room, and we do evening meals for clubs. I mean, if a club does a rally at the weekend, we'll either do a barbecue or we do an evening meal. And yeah, we do homemade cakes and sort of lunches and what have you. But I mean, we're 60
Excellent.
pence for a cup of tea. We're
Ah,
heading
well.
back to the early days of motoring. So, you know, we try and keep prices really reasonable. We've got a gift shop, but all of it's local produce, local chutneys. We make our own cider, so we sell our own cider there on the farm. And we try and make sure everything's local or car relevant,
That's
not
good.
what I call tourist rubbish, you know,
No,
sort of
exactly. And I think
a
that's
million
the.
printed sort of rubbers and pencil sharpeners and
Yeah.
things. We don't have anything like everything we've got is relevant to our era of motoring.
Yeah, the station that I'm doing this for, the America's Web Radio, they're very into traditional museums and car clubs and stuff like
We
that.
try and keep everything. I mean, we have really beautiful cushions with appliqued bubble cars on that we sell on the web. And I mean, all of those are taken from pictures of genuine cars. Everything we do, as I say, we try and keep absolutely right for the era. We do little heritage packs with pennies and halfpennies and farthings in, and ration books and Green Shield stamps. Do you remember them?
I do.
Oh yeah, and driving license, loads and loads of bits, but they're all our own stuff from our archive.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the Classic Car Show right after these messages. This is Kevin Flood, and we're back speaking with Paula Cooper from the Bubble Car Museum here in the UK. I was going to ask you about that. So you have got an archive of sort of ephemera and
Yep.
stuff
Oh,
that's
we've a
relevant to that
huge,
period.
huge amount of age-related stuff. We've got a whole row of shops in the museum and a kitchen and a living room from the 50s, all of which is from the 50s because it's mostly from my in-laws. And then, as I say, also we've got scooters and motorbikes that are relevant to the cars and a collection of French micros, which is quite nice because
Oh,
some
that's
of those are
interesting.
so bizarre.
Yeah, it's there's something that they really were heavily into micro cars,
Well,
weren't
they carried on
they?
making them. They didn't have the Mini arrive and then stop, which is what we did in this country. They carried on making 50cc sans permis cars right the way through, and still do. So yeah, there are weird French ones. I mean, we've got a Peugeot and a Ligier. I mean, the big racing firm. Yeah, we've got yeah a whole a little nice little sort of up the upstairs of the museum has got scooters and French micros.
Yeah, because what's your opening times?
Well, we open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through the year, and we open 10, and we all say last visitors about 4. But I mean, we never shoo anyone out.
No.
And then groups will open 4 during the week, but it's got to be sort of about 10 people.
Yes, yeah.
And again, we do rallies, and then we'll do evenings and what have you for people. But we always say for people with the rides, ring up, and we'll take, you know, because if it's pouring with rain, trotting around the lanes in a Heinkel isn't the nicest experience living.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually, because obviously they're quite precious vehicles now, and I would think parts and stuff is maybe becoming a bit of a problem. So you want to be a bit careful with them, I guess.
Most of the clubs, most of the single mark clubs, instead of buying spares, if you like, bought tooling, which means that spares can be remanufactured. There's very little you can't get. The only thing that trips us up on restoration, occasionally a little bits of trim. Odds and ends, odd bits of trim that you can replicate, but you know isn't dead right.
Yeah.
But pretty much all the, you know, rubber extrusions for windows, all that kind of thing, is really fairly available. So it's not difficult. It's not impossible to restore almost anything. I mean, some of the stuff we've got in the museum, we've got one and there are five others known.
Oh, okay.
What would that
be? Which are those?
There's a Zundapp Janus, an Inter, which is a French car, which is very rare. The Zundapp, I mean, there's one other one running in this country, maybe two that I know of. Our one's to restore. There are ones like that are really rare. I mean, we've got a 2CV, which again falls into the category that was made for the Moroccan market. So its number plate is half and half. You need to be a real anorak to know why it's unique. But it is.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of it, though. That's why, you know, this is the reason why I'd like to talk to people like yourself, because you've got a passion for it and it's not just a commodity. Whereas some of the museums are just, you know, like you say, they sell souvenirs for touristy type stuff, not for people with a real interest. And I think
it's nicer for visitors if there's someone that genuinely can talk to them. And we get so many people that come in and bring us bits and pieces for the museum, like bits they were going to chuck away out the garage and all sorts of odds and ends that we can display because we've got a garage with petrol pumps in the museum. And it's nice if they can talk to someone that genuinely knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And the other thing we're doing, we're just halfway through, I'm co-authoring it with a friend, we're just going to bring out a book, not a book on our museum, but a book on microcars in general. Because there are lots of books out there, and some of them are what I'd call coffee table, which, you know, they're lovely pictures, but not an awful lot of substance. Other ones are fantastically earnest and technical, but there's a way between.
What's readable and nice.
So we're just doing that. Hopefully that will be out. It could be published before Christmas, but we're chasing along trying to get it done.
So what's the book going to contain? Is it going to be a mixture of technical stuff and pictures, or is it going to be history?
We've got a lot of archive. We've a lot of advertising matter that other people won't have. I mean, I've got the most fantastic shade card for Messerschmitt Interiors. But, I mean, God knows what that would be worth. It's just so unusual. And we've loads and loads and loads of bits like that. That we can, you know, that we can make available for people to look at. Yeah, it's got to be technically correct, but you don't want to be bored blind by a huge amount of brake horsepower information.
Yeah, exactly.
It needs to be, as I say, there's a lot of books we've looked at. Some of them are great, some aren't, and we've thought, well, we could probably manage to do a sort of combination of the two.
Hmm. I mean, could you just give me a quick sort of verbal picture of the collection, how many different makes you got, where they're from, how do you source the cars, do you ever sell any?
We occasionally sell them if we've got, what we like is good original for the museum. We don't like over restored. We've had one or two that in my opinion have been a bit primped, and they wouldn't have been back in the day. People didn't tend to do that. So yeah, we've got about 35 cars on exhibit at any time. Probably 10 or 12 scooters and about the same motorbikes. And then we change the exhibits not often during them. I mean, we've just bought a Goggomobile Shopper, which was quite nice, which looks like a child drew it. It's the squarest car in the world. And we pop that in because it's just quite interesting. We then over the winter we'll change exhibits and put other things in and take other things out. So it does sort of, although there's landmark cars, you know, there's always going to be a Messerschmitt, there'll always be, you know, certain ones. But we do try and turn it around and change it. But cars find us. I mean, the Goggomobile Shopper was offered to us somebody just phoned up, said, were we interested? We'll always broker cars for people because we've got a sales page on our website. So if anyone wants to sell a car and it's not one we either want or can afford, most people can afford, we'll always broker them for people because we're the best showroom in the world.
Oh, definitely. Do people loan you cars as well? Or
we do have the odd loan car that are things that we either, again, same sort of reasons, couldn't afford or wouldn't really want. But, yeah, so that's another source of, you know, of possibility. But, yeah, we've had different things, different times, things we've given back. We notably, at the right moment, gave back Jimmy Savile's Isetta.
Yeah, I think our American listeners won't quite get that, but I think if they Google that, they'll...
I think, yes, well, crashing bravely on, but we had that on exhibit for a while, and we gave it back about a year and a half before he died. So the timing there was perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's have you got... are they mainly three-wheelers, or are they mixed? There are some fours. Obviously,
mixture
you've got a 2CV there.
Mixed of the two, because Bonds were virtually all three-wheelers. Yep. Barclays were three and four. Isettas are three and four-wheelers. Heinkels are three-wheelers, and the Meadows Friskies are three-wheeler. So a lot of three-wheelers, but some were always, I mean, Bond Bugs, which are the 70s, obviously, later on. We've got a marvellous Bond Bug that was going to be done as a four-wheeler, and this is just a prototype, but we were lucky enough to get that to exhibit, so that's quite nice. And everyone says, why don't they make them?
Yeah,
and the reason is because you can't get an engine that goes that way because it's rear-engined.
Yeah.
So pick me an engine and we'll go with it.
It's a little bit like the Reliant Kitten, isn't it? That was a kind of, you know, attempt at a four-wheeler from the three-wheeler.
Good little car. Cracking little car. Dreadful name.
Exactly, yeah. You'd sort of think something a little bit better than that, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you need something that sounds a tiny bit more sort of raunchy. I think Kitten was a bit wrong, but nice little car.
Yeah.
Very good little car. And we get people that come in that have driven Reliance all their lives, which are probably people that haven't taken a test.
Not
a four-wheeler test. But I've stuck with the mark. They get a lot of brand loyalty with Reliance.
Yes. No, I actually worked with some people who were very big on Reliance and were sad when they stopped selling them, really.
Reliant then started selling microcars, the French ones. A lot of Reliant dealers sold those. Because there was Axim, Microcar and Ligier were the three French ones that came over to this country. Tiny engine, French build quality.
Yeah, I do see the odd Axim on the road still, actually.
We've got a Ligier here, and we've had various ones, but they used to use the Lombardini for a diesel, which was banged off on absolute, you know, for a hobby. And very vibratory. What they need is going through and a load of sound deadening and rubber washers.
Yeah, I didn't even realise there were diesel microcars.
Oh, yes. Ah, Ligier did.
There you go.
Say, Lombardini diesel. Well, there you go. You learn something new.
I've learned something, two things today. I've learned Frisky and I've learned diesel microcars as well. the other thing, I guess, where do you stand on the configuration of these vehicles? One wheel at the front, two wheels at the front, which you think's the safest or the most stable? Or
the most stable is two at the front, one at the back, like a Messerschmitt, because if you've got one at the front, two at the back, if you hook it in round a corner, the Reliant, the 875 that they did, the later Reliant, which was a go at getting a bigger engine car, they weren't safe at all. They had accident problems with that. And there's a legend, and whether it's true or not, whether it's a legend of the Black Horse, was that a bug was turned over at the press launch and somebody was injured. But that could or could not be true. I'm not absolutely sure. But I think two at the front, one at the back is a lot safer. It would appear to be more stable. But then you have to drive what you're driving.
Yeah,
you have to be aware of what you have. We've had a lot of TV crews here, and we've had people like Philip Glenister, the actor, and we've had various people from the various motoring programs as well. And they've driven cars and been great, been really good in them. You know, listen to what you said. It's a motorbike, so it's the gears are one up and three down, you know, and just and by and large manage really well.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So it's just a matter of being well aware of what you're driving.
Yeah, I think like with my old 1929 vehicle, I have to drive it like a 1929 vehicle.
There's no other way of doing it. Nope. I mean, you've got headlights that stick out 2 feet and then hit the road. You know, you've got brakes that are iffy at best. Messerschmitts are notorious for either veering one way or the other. Mm. If you look at a row of Messerschmitts going down the road and they all break, some will go some way and some will go the other.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because I have seen, I believe, four-wheel Messerschmitts as
well. That's right. That's the those are the ones that are unbelievably, they're referred to as the Messerschmitt Tiger.
Mm.
And those are very, very rare and valuable. There were very few came into this country. Mm. I mean, certainly only in double figures.
So what sort of value would you be looking for? What are those?
Those now, well, it's a moot point. Ones have changed hands for 60 and 70,000.
Wow.
Genuine cars. But then we've just seen a genuine car sold that my husband had restored twice. So I wouldn't call that entirely genuine.
I was going to ask you about that, actually. Do you take on restorations for clubs or owners?
We take on restorations for owners, but it's a slow process because obviously we've got the museum open. But I mean, my other half's about the one of the best restorers in the country. I mean, and I say that without fear or favour. Yeah. We do our own paintwork and everything. So all of it's done, and all of the car is, when it's finished, is actually made of metal rather than great bobs of filler.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the Classic Car Show right after these messages. This is Kevin Flood, and we're back speaking with Paula Cooper from the Bubble Car Museum here in the UK. If you do take on a restoration, is it a complete tear down, or
it's entirely at the whim of the customer. I mean, I always do a huge long estimate of sort of need to have and nice to have. Mm. And people can tick off what they want done. We can start with a bare body shell, we can put in new floors, new everything. And I mean, we can fabricate panels, all of which, you know, people can have whatever they choose. I mean, there's people that make interiors for them, but you can have one that looks, we had a Heinkel that somebody loaned us that he'd spent a fortune on that wasn't worth the top line. What he valued it at or what he'd spent on it was way more than it was worth. Mm. You have to be a little bit careful that people don't go. Or everyone used to say to me with 2CVs, we used to re-chassis. We used to make our own chassis for 2CVs and re-chassis them. And people say, is it worth it? And I say, if it's worth it to you, it's worth it.
Yeah,
but
I think you're
not necessarily at that time. 2CVs, if you'd done everything and done a perfect restoration, you'd just have been on the money. But I'm talking about £5,000, and you'd just about have had a car worth that. Now, obviously, much more. So again, it's clicked into being worth doing more. But I wouldn't ever advise anyone. You've got to. But I mean, I always itemise everything in a restoration so people are totally aware of what they're getting. And, you know, that way they can put together what works best for them financially.
Yeah, I guess, and I, having experienced it myself, sometimes when you start to tear something down, there's a lot of hidden horrors there that you can never give.
I mean, mind you, these are simple cars. Yeah. You're not going to have much hidden.
Yeah, that's true.
If you've got a running engine, you're not going to have, you know you're going to have certain givens, like the brakes are probably going to be sort of wedged on. Mm. You're going to have this, you're going to have that, you're going to need a new brake cylinder because the rubber will be gone. There's what you're doing, you know you're going to put a wiring loom in. Well, you might as well just put a whole wiring loom in if it's a barn find. But it's one of those things. It's sort of how long's a piece of string.
Yeah, I guess, how much of it, do you have to make most of it, the wiring looms, engine parts, or...?
Well, again, we've got frames for making wiring looms, but most of the clubs do a wiring loom. They'll either do, I mean, depending on the car, either a front half and a rear half and or whatever. So most of it you can get. We can make it, or sometimes it's cheaper to buy it. Mm. But again, the customer can work that out for themselves.
So
it's
something
very
like
hard to go into old wiring, as you well know.
Yeah, for something like a Messerschmitt or something like, if you've got engine issues and stuff like that, is all that kind of stuff still available?
Yeah, it's barely available. You can buy a whole engine.
Wow. So that's interesting, because I have noticed, you know, watching TV programs, etc., they are definitely becoming more and more collectible, because I think they give you that period of time, plus the fact they're a little bit cheaper than a really expensive four-wheel car, if you like, as
Well,
well.
you're going to get your you've not got fuel issues with them, because obviously they're still doing high miles per gallon, even with modern cars. They're still, they're drivable and usable, Messerschmitts particularly, because they're that bit nippier. And if that's the era that does it for you, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, exactly. That's what my thought was, really. It's kind of an affordable way to get into some interesting classic motoring, I think.
Well, people remember them. I mean, we get some really funny stories from people that come into the museum, and we get quite what I call sort of twinkly older couples that come in and sort of, oh, we used to go courting in it and all sorts. You think, gosh, did you really? Yeah, good luck with that.
One of the things that I'm conscious of, and the guys who do this show are conscious of, is the fact that younger people now aren't really taking a lot of notice of classic cars and history and stuff like that. Do you get reasonable throughput of granddads and kids and
You'd
dads
be
and
surprised
kids?
that we get a huge amount of grandparents and grandchildren.
Yeah, it's
But there
great.
are younger people in some of the clubs. It's not all. People tend to take on their parents' car.
Oh, right. That's
So
interesting.
it's not you get a huge amount of prophets of doom. Oh, well, it's all old men. Well, yes, to a certain extent it is. I mean, you get a fair amount of chats about prostates when a club
Yeah.
come. On the other hand, you get people that get absolutely mullered.
Yeah.
And you we've got our Halloween rally now. The average age that I've got written down in the diary isn't awful, if you know what I mean. It's not everyone sort of in their dotage. Surprising. And particularly clubs like, well, I don't know, Bond Bug Owners. Again, that tends to, it's not, quite the picture of doom people would have you believe.
Yeah, I think bond bugs and stuff like that is quite trendy as well,
Well,
isn't
they're
it? And so,
so iconic. They were then, they still are.
it's their sort of hipster type
Yeah.
thing, I think, as
Well,
well, isn't
they
it?
were totally. Yes, they called it the, what was it, the Dolly Magnet? It was
Yeah,
dreadful. The advertising for it's so
I can
non-PC, it's
remember.
great.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
can. Yeah, I mean, it was. I was working in the motor trade around the same when that first came out as well, and it was interesting to say the least. What do you do any sort of special rates for kids if they want to bring kids with them or things like that?
We
Or
charge £3 for adults and we charge £1 for children.
Can't beat that, really, can you?
Well, you can't, and we still get people come in and say, "Do you do concessions?" And I will say, "Not at £3,
Not at
sir."
those prices, no. And
No,
at
and we've had one or
60p
two
for a
people
cuppa.
who've left because we don't do concessions, which
Really?
I think, good luck.
Yes. Well,
I
particularly
mean,
if you're going to get a cup of tea for 60p as well, it's not.
what we like to think is that two people and two kids can come in, do the museum, have a guidebook to go around it, come out, have sort of, like tea, drinks, and everything else, and they've not spent £20.
No,
And we
exactly.
do little die-cast Isettas on the counter that we do for half what you can get them on the internet. So people can buy something for the kids, and the whole thing is probably not cost them a £20 note. And I think that's a day out.
Well, you're not gonna, you don't get that much these days, to be honest with
You
you. I,
don't.
you mentioned earlier actually that there's some rides and also access to some of the exhibits. What do you do in that area?
Well, we do ride. We charge £10 for a ride. At the moment, it's a Heinkel. It might be a Messerschmitt next year. We do change it. And what we do is a ride voucher that people can give as a present. And we do a bubble car ride, free entry to the museum, and a guidebook, and tea and a piece of cake. And we do that for £15. And we do that as a voucher so people can give it as a present.
Oh, that's good. Do you get a reasonable take up on that?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. It's surprising. It's quite a nice, it's just a bit of fun, and if it's someone that age, then that works quite well.
Have you got any little film shows or anything going inside whilst amongst
The
the.
only, no, we don't really. We have a continuous film loop of the upstairs in case people are a bit wibbly on stairs, so that people get the whole museum rather than part of it. And I've got a funny feeling they actually get more than the museum, because I think we've changed some of those exhibits. But so we do that, and we've got disabled facilities that work very well. Everything's on the flat,
That's
everything's
good.
non-slip, there's disabled loos, and they can, access the cafe. And the other thing we do is we always make sure that dogs come in. Dogs are much less trouble than children in the
Oh,
museum.
yeah, I imagine.
Much.
Is there vehicles that you allow kids to sit in or anything like that? Or
We
do you.
do supervised. Everything's behind ropes, but there's notices there saying if you'd like a closer look, please ask. Which is
Excellent.
another way of saying don't help yourself. We do get people, because a little tiny, like a wing repeater on a car, you know, someone will brush past and scrub it off. That's probably 90 quid to replace.
That's the trouble,
you know, things
isn't it?
Aren't cheap. So we don't mind. We'll open up cars. We let children have photographs in cars. Don't mind at all, as long as people screw the nut.
Yeah, you mentioned the upstairs. How are you laid out then? Have you got vehicles upstairs as well?
Yeah, we've got all the French micros and the motorbikes and the scooters are upstairs.
So are you in like a barn type thing?
They were farm buildings, but they were enormously tall. So we've got a mezzanine floor with stairs. And that's about a third of the floor area of the museum is upstairs.
So how have you got them? How did you manage to get them up there?
A forklift truck. Forklift up and obliging neighbours.
Excellent. So, yeah, so it's a good, you know, they've got a good large area to walk around then. So how many square feet do you think you've got?
It depends how interested you are. But as I say, there are shop windows full of 1950s toys, household items, cameras, china, all sorts of stuff. Everything that we've collected up. Big collection of Bakelite, which, again, is a collectible on its own.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And easy to break as well.
Electrical stuff. We've got radios, lamps, lights, all sorts of stuff. So there is other stuff to look at as well as cars.
Yeah, that's bringing me round to, so that encourages maybe a whole family to come along, so because they've got other things
we
to look at.
We used to get what we used to call smacked arse syndrome, where you'd get one member of a couple that came who'd sit out in the car, whilst one of them came in and spent ages walking around. And I would just go out and say, look, do come in, come sit in the cafe, don't have to sit out here. But as there's a lot more stuff and a lot more of general interest as well, then that overcame that very successfully.
No, that's great. I you mentioned earlier you've got your Halloween event and things like that. Mm-hmm. What other things do you have? Did you have weddings and parties? Or
we did a lovely wedding in the summer for people with that got married somewhere else, then came and had a blessing at the museum.
Okay.
And that was Volkswagen campers, and it was like something out of Midsummer Murders. there was a lit up marquee. They had conjurers and all sorts of things. It was like Glastonbury in tiny, and a very irritating Kayleigh band. but nonetheless, it worked wonderfully. And we don't mind doing events like that at all. It was an absolute pleasure. We did a 2-hour barbecue for them, so everyone ate. And then everyone just, it was really pleasant evening. It was nice for us too.
No, that's great. I mean,
the grounds are very easy for that, because we've a proper campsite, then we've a rally field. So, you know, there's bags of room for people.
So, I mean, the more things you can get some income from,
the more
those
car clubs
helps you.
That come, the better, because those work very well. We also get caravan rallies of people that are enthusiasts. And
it's all helps you to keep it going, doesn't it? You know, that's the
key.
Oh,
absolutely. And it's good fun. We meet some lovely people.
Yeah. Do you do anything sort of educational? Do you do school visits or anything like that?
Try not to. we did very small children. We do get schools ask us. And realistically, they're sort of ticking a box, but they're not ticking our box, because they're too small to know. But we get design students quite often.
I was going to
ask
about
children
that.
And older children are fine. But very littlies, they don't really know what they're looking at.
No,
I mean,
that
probably sounds fantastically patronising, but they don't.
No. Actually, probably find people in their maybe 30s even probably don't know what they're looking at now either, I guess.
No, but generally speaking, they've got an older relative that does, so that sort of covers that.
The design student aspect's interesting, because there is some really interesting design in those vehicles.
There's some amazingly sort of iconic stuff that, you know, does lend itself to. And the advertising back then, of course, was absolutely appalling, because you didn't really have trading standards. So there's some very, and if you're doing that kind of thing, then we've had design students and photography clubs too.
I guess on the design side, I would think also the use of space in those vehicles is quite amazing, because watching Wheeler Dealers there, they've got like Ed, who's nearly 7 foot tall, sat inside one. So
he's not actually
impressive.
7 foot tall. The height isn't an issue in those cars.
Yeah.
There's plenty of heights, like two CVs. There's absolutely acres of
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the Classic Car Show right after these messages. This is Kevin Flood, and we're back speaking with Paula Cooper from the Bubble Car Museum here in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had the Sirena, was it the Sirena, on display there, the Wheeler Dealers car?
That Polish car that came from,
How did that come about?
Well, let's just say you needed to see the programme, and you probably need to talk to me in private and tell you what really happened. it was. They phoned us and asked us if we'd do it, so.
Yeah, no, I know, because that qualifies as a micro car, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, it's era and engine size and, you know, a few things that there's no give or take, you know, absolute solid definition.
Mm.
But it was very nice having that for a little while round here because there's quite a lot of Polish immigrants. I mean, we go to a phenomenal Polish restaurant in Boston.
Mm.
People just don't know what they're missing.
Well, I've got some friends in Chicago, which is also a very big Polish contingent, and the restaurants in that are great. No, I agree.
Yeah. Phenomenal. I mean, this one is absolutely fantastic. We're just sort of helping him promote a little bit. The car was nice. And a lot of, again, exactly the same as people would come in and say, oh, I learned to drive in that, and it's a Mini or a Morris Minor or something like that. This was Polish people coming saying, oh, my dad had one of those. It was really nice.
I don't want too many people to know, but I actually worked for Yugo Zastava GB for a while, so I know exactly what that's
where you
like.
Go for spares.
But it's kind of interesting. Have you ever had a Crossley there, the American microcar?
No,
because they're fetching amazing money in the States at the minute because there were
That's because there's people in the States that spend amazing amounts of money on
cars. That's very true. I think all micro cars are actually now because they're definitely hitting a spot now. I've noticed.
Well, there's been a couple of collections that have been bought and taken to America, which everyone over here jumps up and down over.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the cars weren't English anyway, so I don't really see what the issue is. But that's happened a couple of times, and there's something not, for me, quite right in someone just buying a collection and then having a collection. And all it was a checkbook transaction.
Yeah, it's strange, I must admit.
It's not quite how collecting works for me, anyway. I mean, I'm sure it's the most commendable thing to do, but... It's perhaps not quite, you know, it's rather nice if you find them and restore them and what have you. And, I mean, you know, then all those cars are restored to almost perfection, and it perhaps isn't quite the spirit of the thing.
No, it's whether you, I think it's the old argument, whether you're doing it for the joy of it and the enthusiasm or just because you can.
Because it's a bloody good investment and it's a good way of avoiding
like you go
tax,
and buy a bunch of Rolex watches or something like that, you know, and it's
in a way, it's nice finding things and seeking things out.
Is.
I mean, we can never afford things. We're always scrabbling to, we'd love to buy this. And, you know, loads of people phone us up with stuff that they want to sell, which are way too expensive, you know, and we just can't do.
What do you sometimes, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, you do get some donations of bits and pieces, though?
Yeah, we've had cars donated, odd ones. We get loads of memorabilia that people, you know, '50s is not always, not everything's desirable yet. So, you know, we get loads and loads of bits and bobs, lovely kitchen bits that we've been given, you know, all of which are absolutely charming.
Mm.
But they fit into our little displays. But, you know, if you're clearing out sort of your grandmother's house, you've nowhere for them.
No, and I think it's stuff that was getting just thrown away a couple of years ago, and now it's becoming
10 years ago, it would have been
collectible.
Being very thrown away.
Yeah.
With the advent of eBay, I think everyone has a punt and sees what they can do.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you get documentation for the cars and stuff donated to you and parts and bits and pieces that people come across, or is that not
quite often common? When we buy a car, it comes with a whole raft of stuff because people have collected up spares and what have you. Sometimes people will come in and say, are these any use to you? We've got a bit at the moment that somebody gave us. It's definitely off a bond and definitely off the steering, but we've yet to actually ascertain whereabouts. But you do get, we do, and it's lovely. And I mean, if people have stuff that they genuinely can't, you know, can't house and don't want to throw away, then we're a good option.
I mean, I guess you sometimes get the abandoned projects offered
Not
your way,
terribly
I guess.
Much. Most people now are aware of what things are worth. So, you know, you don't get too many. We do sometimes. Mm. We've had the odd bond that's baffled people.
Yeah, I guess it's it's because some people, I think, bite off more than they can chew sometimes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I do realise the value they've got, but then they think, oh, I'm not going to finish it, but I would like to see it go somewhere that
we do get offered stuff, and we do valuations for people, and to say we'll always, you know, I mean, sometimes we'll buy stuff. Sometimes we'll buy stuff and sell it on. Other times, you know, we buy stuff and hang on to it for the museum. We've got a shed full of stuff waiting to be restored.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, actually. So if somebody gives you a ring and says, you know, could you value a vehicle for me or do an inspection
for
me?
Yeah, we do that for insurance. Yeah, and insurance companies will accept our valuations.
Yeah, I was going to say, because
you need agreed value insurance.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, agreed value, because I had to do that with my Model A. So it's,
yeah, you would. Yeah. Well, we do that for people. We've just done I've just done one actually a couple of days ago for someone.
Hmm. Do they bring them to you, or do you go and look at them?
Generally speaking, it's cars we know of.
Hmm.
So by and large, we don't need to look. People take photographs. If we're unsure, we would. Mm. I wouldn't value anything that was absolutely sight unseen. But quite often, they're ones that have been to our rallies and things.
Yeah, it's interesting now because there's quite a lot more classic car insurance companies now, isn't? People like Haggerty and stuff like that have come into the market, and it's good from my point of view because it's quite competitive now.
It's more competitive
terrible.
Than it was. I mean, we use brokers that we recommend to everyone that they've become more independent than they were, and they've always been massively helpful, and we always pass them on to people. And yeah, there is quite a spread now, which is great.
Because I'd imagine you've got, you know, with your collection of cars, you've got to make sure your agreed values are regularly updated, because otherwise, you know, if you get a problem, then you're struggling.
Well, everything's a single vehicle values and all sorts of stuff. It's a fair old undertaking. Plus all the SORN requirements.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, anything that's running, and most of ours are, it's very few that aren't. I mean, we've got a funny little thing called a Suzuki Fronti, which was a tiny little Suzuki that never came into this country. This one was brought in for somebody specially at Suzuki, and I think there's one other. Mm. And that's about the only one that's got the engine out at the moment. Mm. Funny little thing. Bit like a Suzuki WizKid, but even smaller.
Oh, okay. Do you, so how many would you think of the vehicles you'd have taxed and on the road at any given, well, not taxed
well, we,
now,
yeah,
but,
we,
you know.
We're motor trade, so yeah. We don't have
trade
to have
plates.
Them
yeah.
insured. We can run them on trades. Mm. Anything will come out and unsawn and run. We've got four or five that are up and running, because most of them are historic, so we don't have to tax them. We only have to tax them. We don't have to pay for it.
Mm.
So it's very quick and easy to put something into commission. I mean, we get asked to do weddings and proms and things.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I mean, what other things? Obviously, TV programmes, probably.
We do get asked for TV. We won't lend cars. We don't mind lending car and driver, but we don't lend cars. Never would touch Top Gear. And we
no,
get,
I don't blame you either.
Well, their attitude to classic cars doesn't. Anyway, I don't need my views on that.
Well, not only classic
cars. But we do get some to do weddings.
Yeah, because on the Top Gear thing, my wife used to work for Porsche GB, and they're just as destructive with brand new cars, I can assure you.
It's a wrong attitude altogether, and all this dropping caravans from cranes
and
crashing. It's just, as I say, you probably don't need my views on that.
No, it's the eccentric British that don't really exist.
Quite.
When I talked to the guys in the States, oh, Top Gear, and I said, well, actually, I can't stand it. Being in the motor trade, Mr. No, I can't stand him.
It's not a programme. I think initially it was good. There have been other programmes. I think Quentin Wilson, we did a TV programme with him. He did a programme which actually told people about cars they could afford.
Yeah, with Jodie Kidd.
Which was fine. What you don't need is what sideways round a racetrack in a car that's 75 grand.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't find that particularly entertaining.
No. The ones I do like are things like the Fudge Townsend one, the Car SOS and things like that.
Steve Berry, I think,
yep.
who used to be on Top Gear years ago, and he now does a marvellous radio programme. And he came in, he's absolute car fanatic. Yep. That's what you want. And someone that knows what you're talking about when you talk about period cars, whereas I would hesitate to suggest that most of the Top Gear people have got a clue.
No,
and watching
them
drive around countries and insult local people, I really don't find particularly entertaining.
No, I must admit the programs for people like Ant Anstead on and stuff like that, who's a car designer, you know, that sort of stuff, and restorer, then that's fine, because you then see the real thing rather than the reality
a different kind of thing. But a lot of the TV programs are very contrived,
without mentioning
any names.
They're people have got to realize that they're entertainment and not the real
it's
thing.
Reality TV.
Yeah, that's not
that
real.
Yes, without perhaps the dreadfully chabby people.
No,
it's the same thing that, you know, I mean, there are in America, here and everywhere else, programs that people unfortunately think are real, but you've really got to look behind
them. They do, and the classic car community in the States feels the same way. You know, they look.
I think anyone that genuinely likes classic cars would. As I say, we certainly do, you know, we do what TV we're asked to do. We did For the Love of Cars with Philip Leonard.
Well, quite like that.
Wonderful.
It's not the worst thing I've seen. He's his hands up. He doesn't know anything.
Well,
and,
I tell you what, he knows a lot more than some, and he's
yes,
the most genuine and amusing man.
Yeah, that's what
we had a lovely day filming with them. Both were just absolutely lovely. They drove the cars. They were funny.
Yeah, I remember seeing them going down the country lanes with them.
That's
actually
right.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And they were your cars.
They were our cars. That was hilariously funny.
That was brilliant, because
they were genuinely keen on what they were doing. We had them with us all day. We did lunch for them. They were absolutely delightful. All of those sort of programs are lovely. But again,
okay, what have you got planned for the future then, project wise if you've got anything coming up or
Halloween rally, then we close halfway through November, then we reopen just before Easter, and in May we have our own rally, which is quite fun, because we always have sort of, you know, I mean, that's all kinds of cars. Occasionally a few VW campers come, and we have live music, and it's just a nice weekend. But then through the year, I honestly can't tell you. I know we've got quite a lot of rallies booked in. May, we're absolutely jam-packed. We've got Germany. So, same as.
That's great. No. Thanks for speaking to me, because it is something that people need to see.
It's an important era of British car manufacture.
It is indeed.
That gets awfully lost.
It does. Lost a lot of things sort of in the manufacturing of things.
Men in sheds making cars.
Yep.
And it needs preserving. It really does.
And that's what you're doing. That's excellent.
Doing our best.
Thank you very much, Paula. It's been a great and very enlightening interview. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We do our best.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, my dear.
I'm Kevin Flood, and this is the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Goodbye.